Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from snowy and cold Seattle, Washington, for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Today we are continuing to discuss the top 10 stories from 2008 with Dennis Wagner and Kevin Wirth from the Access Research Network, except this time we're going to discuss the top 10 intelligent design and evolution resources that the Access Research Network recommends from the year 2008. Dennis Wagner and Kevin Wirth are both with the Access Research Network, or ARN, which is one of the oldest intelligent design organizations, and it has one of the most extensive intelligent design online stores. So Dennis and Kevin, thank you for being on the show with us again today.
Good to be here, Casey.
So every year you guys do both a top 10 news stories of Darwin and design for the year and also a top 10 resources for the year. And we talked about the top 10 Darwin and design news stories in a recent podcast. And in today's podcast, we're going to talk about the top 10 Darwin and design resources for the year of 2008. These will be some resources that people want to check out that came out during the year of 2008. So let's just jump right into it. What are your top 10 Darwin and design resources for the year of 2008?
Okay, see, Kevin Wirth here. Our number 10 Darwin Design resource turns out to be a book titled How to Be an Intellectually Fulfilled Atheist or Not by William Dembski and Jonathan Wells. If you already own a copy of The Design of Life, also by Dembski and Wells, then you don't need to purchase this little book because it's a reprint of Chapter 8 taken from The Design of Life. The topic these two gentlemen address in this book is all about the origin of life and theories related to that, and the authors set out to discuss what they claim is the real problem with origin of life scenarios, and that is, how do we explain the origin of cells, and as they put it, their jaw-dropping complexity. The book offers a review of several of the key arguments offered by renowned scientists that we've all heard about, who've done a lot of work in this field, and whose work is also widely discussed in many high school and college biology texts. The bulk of this little book critiques the work of Alexander Oparin and suggests that life began using some tendency of matter towards self-organization. Dembski and Wells then explore and they critique the key assumptions related to this argument, showing why it's not as compelling as many would have us believe. I would say that this book would be of considerable interest to a wide audience, but especially students who are just beginning to explore the origin of life issue. And one of the points that the authors make in this book that I find particularly important is that far too many of origin of life researchers accept the plausibility of their ideas rather than the evidence as the standard. This is the point that Dembski and Wells bring out in their book. The whole concept of reasonable probability, which they bring up in this book, is a driver for many scientists who either rely on or acquiesce to many arguments of likelihood and probability as a substitute for actual evidence. I've observed this to be a very frequent tactic used by many Darwinians and evolutionists for many of their other arguments where evidence is either lacking or not compelling.
You might wonder about the title too, Kevin, how to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist or not. Why did they call it that? They kind of explained that in the introduction where they said Richard Dawkins writes that Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. And Will Provine stated that Darwinian evolution is the greatest engine of atheism ever invented. So they're really responding to those statements by Provine and Dawkins and saying, if Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, then you might want to look elsewhere for your evidence because you're not going to find it in origin of life scenarios. It just doesn't get there.
And Dennis Wagner, what is the next top resource for intelligent design from this year?
Well, actually, the next three, Casey, are kind of what I would call introductory texts, which I think are great because it gets a lot of information about this debate out to laymen who don't particularly have scientific background, but helps them understand the basic arguments. The number nine is called Intelligent Design 101, Leading Experts Explain the Key Issues. And this is a collection of chapters from a lot of the authors in the intelligent design movement. Michael Behe, Philip Johnson, yourself, J.P. Moreland, J. Richard, all have contributions in this. So if you're looking for one book to buy that gives you an overview, there's so many books out there now that I think this is a good one if you want to look for a starting place. I also like this one because you and Logan wrote an appendix for it, which deals with some of the arguments presented by Francis Collins and his theistic evolution arguments. And as far as I know, this is one of the only places where there exists a rebuttal to some of Francis Collins' arguments for theistic evolution. And he's a very influential guy, and I think it's important that we have some response responses to that.
Well, I appreciate what you say there, Dennis. And I want to make a note that that rebuttal to Francis Collins is actually available free online, and that our listeners can go to the website ideacenter.org, and there's actually a link from the main page where you can download that rebuttal of Francis Collins as sort of a promotional teaser for the book. So you don't have to go and actually buy the book to get the rebuttal to Collins, but I certainly do recommend checking the book out. There's a lot of other good articles and chapters in it.
The next resource that we've got listed is number 8. It's called Understanding Intelligent Design, Everything You Need to Know in Plain Language by, again, Bill Demski, and this time with co-authored with Sean McDowell. This book is a brief review of the evidence for intelligent design, and it's written for general audiences. This book is pretty easy to follow. It's well-written and well-documented. Major topics covered in the book include, first, the central theories of ID, showing why the presence of information and meaningful complexity require the involvement of intelligence, and second, why ID adheres to the scientific method and why it's a valid field of scientific inquiry, which, of course, a lot of our critics dispute rather vociferously. And third, talks about why scientific evidence increasingly conflicts with evolutionary theory. And finally, how both systems of thought have radical implications for our culture and what readers can do about it.
And Casey, our number 7, again, is another general audience resource called Salvo Magazine on Intelligent Design. If you're not familiar with Salvo Magazine, I really highly recommend it, especially for the younger generation. It's just got a layout and a format and graphics that I think appeal to younger people. And it's in a magazine format, so it's great for leaving around a lobby or a living room. And they devoted this whole issue to the intelligent design topic. The issue is entitled, What's So Intelligent About Design? And it's got a number of excellent articles, again, by a wide range of authors, Behe, John Bloom, Ray Bolin, Larry Caldwell, Seth Cooper, Carolyn Crocker, William Demski, Michael Ignor, just on and on and on. There's probably not enough 20 authors listed there. So it's a great resource. You can find a couple of the articles online, too. We've got links to them in our top 10 list. So if you want to get an idea of what these articles are like, go to our top 10 resource list and click on some of the highlighted names. You can read a couple of those articles online. But I recommend the whole issue, and I think the cost of the back issues of the magazine are only $6 or $7, so it's not really expensive. But again, a great introductory text.
Coming in, our number 6 Darwin vs. Design resource for the year is called The Cell of Design, How Chemistry Reveals the Creator's Artistry. This book by Fuzz Reyna talks about how cutting-edge techniques developed in recent years by biochemists have revealed some startling features inside the cell that point to the conclusion that materialistic stepwise processes can't really explain the obviously designed nature of the cell. You know, we hear folks talk all the time about how, yes, nature does exhibit signs of design, but it's apparent design. It's not actual design. This book gets into the idea that, no, it really is design. So in the book, Reyna, who's also a PhD in biochemistry and currently works with Reasons to Believe, he highlights the powerful scientific evidence for design going far beyond irreducible complexity. He talks about issues such as the origin of cell membrane, and then he shows how the molecular features of the cell, which are some of the smallest structures in nature, manifest the same characteristics displayed in human engineering design. It's got molecular motors, information properties, chicken and egg systems, quality control checkpoints, are just a few of the more than a dozen indicators for design that he explained in the book. He's done a really great job of explaining the complexity of the cell in a way that the layman can understand with lots of excellent visual aids and diagrams. Now, I personally consider the evidence for the intricacies of the cell to be Exhibit A in the argument for actual design in nature. And I think that the work by Ronas and others is where the argument for design will eventually gain some significant traction and credibility in the future for ID.
You definitely don't have any objections from me there.
It's really interesting, Casey, that you find that a lot of proponents of ID are engineers. And that's because engineers are trained to understand things that are designed. I don't think the biologists go through that same training. And they come to biology with the mindset that this is something that has evolved by chance over time. It's just a different mindset. And so I think the engineers are seeing this first. And I think the biologists will eventually follow. But it's going to take some time because they've been working from a different mindset. But as design details of the cell become known, like they are in Fuzz's book, I think, as Kevin said, we're just going to see more and more of this in the future. Casey, our number 5 on our resource list is a new book by David Berlinski called The Devil's Delusion, Atheism and Its Scientific Pretensions. You had to be asleep, I think, in 2008 not to notice the Rise of Militant Atheism in the Western World, books by Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchin. These guys all came out with bestseller books that basically denigrated traditional religious beliefs as dangerous and foolish. So not only were they saying, well, it's okay to have your belief and I'll have my belief, they're saying your belief is outright wacky and dangerous and a danger to the future of the human race. So these kind of outrageous claims just had to be responded to, and I think Berlinski did a great job in his book Devil's Delusion of doing that. And, you know, Berlinski was one of those guys interviewed and expelled. I think you remember him sitting up in his flat in Paris, and he is so smooth with words, whether they're spoken or written. And this book is just a joy to read. One example he gives is the atheists always want to blame all the wars in the world on religion. And he goes and says, okay, well, let's add up all the wars that have happened in history, those that were started by atheists and those that were started over religious issues. And let's tally how many lives were lost in those wars. And I don't think anybody ever does that. They just throw out statements like this, that all the wars in the world are due to religion. And when he tallies it's all up, it's pretty easy to see that those wars that were instigated by atheists had more death tolls than the religious ones. Now, no war is a good war, but I don't think you can blame war on religion. I think war is a result of human nature, whether you're religious or not religious. And so the fact that these guys were trying to, from a scientific perspective, denigrate traditional religious beliefs had to be responded to, and I can't think of a better guy than Berlinski to do that.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Dennis Wagner, that Dr. Berlinski's book is a fascinating book, especially since it's a non-theist defending theism against atheism. And again, this goes with the theme that you talked about in the other podcast.
Yeah, I just might add too, Casey, that this book, the hardback edition, sold out, and the publisher is not planning to reprint the hardback edition, so I had a hard time getting copies. We wanted to carry it here at ARN, and we couldn't get copies, but I understand a paperback edition is coming out next year, so if you try to find this book, you might be able to find a used copy of the hardback at the moment, but don't give up, because paperback edition should be coming out soon.
Okay, so what's your next resource from this year?
Our next one is a book by University of Warwick sociologist Steve Fuller called Descent Over Descent, Intelligent Design's Challenge to Darwinism. This is a book where Fuller explains nature and the problem of scientific consensus on controversial topics. He argues that intelligent design is not anti-science, it's just anti-establishment, and makes the prediction that as biological study continues to become more like an engineering project, it's going to be harder for scientists to deny that life is intelligently designed. Fuller is a strong supporter of academic freedom, and he describes himself as a secular humanist. So the arguments that he presents in his book aren't all exactly the approach that most ID critics have taken. Kind of catches them off guard. Fuller's a provocative approach in his book questions whether there really is any consensus in science about anything, and instead depicts the way science works as more an authority-based and caste-driven system. His comments throughout the book are controversial, to say the least. For example, he refers to theistic evolution as a, quote, intellectual mirage, end quote, and methodological naturalism as a pseudo-philosophy driven by bigotry. So, he's not winning any points with ID critics, I don't think. Much of what he has to say is intellectually invigorating, and, you know, it'll cause many readers to think about the issues in ways that a lot of other books on this topic wouldn't.
Yeah, and I know, Casey, you did a podcast interview with him, too, that I listened to a while ago, and I thought that was another great way to get an overview of his views. He was featured in the Expelled film. You remember a guy with books stacked on every wall of his office and papers of 10 feet high on his desk. The guy just looks like a voracious writer and reader and very interesting guy, and a guy I'm kind of glad to see on our side because, again, he's kind of a neutral as far as worldview perspective goes, but just really arguing from an intellectual honesty position that some of the ideas ought to be on the table.
I completely agree with both of you, Dennis and Kevin, and Steve Fuller is a fascinating person. It's interesting that this debate really attracts a lot of people who are willing to be independent thinkers and really are the true skeptics in the world today. You mentioned, Kevin, that Steve Fuller says ID is not anti-science, but is merely anti-establishment. I couldn't agree with that more. I think that intelligent design is not anti-science. It's only when evolutionary biology ceases to be viewed by its adherents as a science and instead becomes an establishment that Darwinists can ignore competing theories like ID on the grounds that they are anti-science. But ID is certainly not anti-science any more than any dissenting scientific viewpoint is anti-science. Thank you for bringing up this book today. So what's next on the list?
Well, next is our number three resource for 2008, and that's a book called Slaughter of the Dissidents by Jerry Bergman. I'm sure Kevin may want to jump in here, as Kevin was very closely involved with getting this book published and has known Jerry for a long time. But basically, I see the reason that this is so important is it's really an in-depth follow-up to the Expelled movie. Jerry Bergman was a biology professor who basically was expelled from his job at Bowling Green over 30 years ago because he wasn't an ardent defender of Darwin, and it wasn't even for a lot of what he actually said in the classroom that got him expelled. But he went through a lot of personal suffering as a result of that, and he began a lifelong quest to document how many other people went through a similar type thing. And so he's interviewed over 300 people in his quest to document what he calls one of America's growing hate crimes, and that is persecution that exists against Darwin doubters. Darwin doubters, to him, you know, includes a wide range of people, anybody who has expressed concerns or doubts about the theory of evolution, whether they be creationists, young earth creationists, old earth creationists, intelligent designers, theistic evolutionists, just agnostics, but anybody who has challenged Darwinism and suffered because of that. So some of the critics have expelled say, gee, okay, interesting point, but they only interview a half a dozen people. Surely this is an isolated event. Well, Jerry's book shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is not an isolated event.
It would be fair to say, in my view, that what Jerry documents in this book, it represents one of America's fastest growing hate crimes. The way that some people who exhibit their dissent over Darwinism or evolution, the way that some of these people are treated is just absolutely horrifying, and it's unbelievable. In fact, a lot of people, when they hear about this, they can hardly believe it. That's one of the reasons why I published this book.
Okay, well, that's great. Let's hear about the next ID resource on your list.
Number two on our resource list for the year 2008 is the Spore video game. Some of you may have heard about this game, but it's pretty cool, actually. You can, rather than just debating the evidence for Darwin and design, listeners who are curious can experience the concepts in this game. Legendary Sims game creator Will Wright released Spore and admitted that the interactive game about evolution also puts the player in the role of an intelligent designer, which, to the consternation of a lot of folks. But the game, once it was released, spawned a series of articles about ID and evolution in nearly every major news media outlet, from the New York Times to USA Today, and even Wired magazine. This is a really cool game, similar in concept to SimCity, except instead of just building a city, you get to direct the evolutionary development of a spore through various phases of development. There's the cell phase, where you can choose to be an herbivore or a carnivore, the tribal phase, the civilization phase, and so on, where you can actually become, for example, a starship captain who then colonizes other galaxies. So if you're a gamer who's interested in Darwin and design issues, you should definitely check this one out, because you might find this to be a great way to discuss related issues with other gamers.
Kevin, I found it interesting what Will Wright had to say about how this game came to be. He said initially they wanted it to model, you know, their concept of evolution very carefully, with things mutating just randomly. But what they found was it was not emotionally engaging. It says, when we put the players in the role of an intelligent designer, then people were much more emotionally attached to what they made. And I thought that was an interesting comment about us as humans and maybe about how we got here. Randomly mutating things just aren't interesting. When I read that, I got so curious, I went and downloaded the game on my iPhone for $9.99. That's probably the cheapest version you can get, and tried it out. And it was kind of fun. It does have a game aspect to it, but you're building this creature, and you get to put its defensive mechanisms on, and you get to design its color and
other
things. So
yeah, and technically speaking, the graphics might not be as sophisticated as you might see in other games, but they are better than average, and they work pretty well. They also contain a great deal of entertainment value, like the sounds that these little organisms make. It's kind of humorous, and their expressions and behavior. But it's also a very versatile game. It allows you to create your own types of protection for the critters and their natural defenses or weapon systems. And you can really get into it. And you can even share these creatures that you create with other folks and add your own music or set your critters to be social or aggressive. You can establish different types of relationships, like just friends or allies and so on. So it's a pretty interesting and fun game.
So, Casey, if your listeners are tired of listening to the debate about this Darwin or design, I'd tell them to go out there and try it. You know, we've talked about two things now. One of our top 10 news stories was the Stylus software from Biologic that people can download and actually test some ideas of evolution. That one's a little more scientific. This one's a little more game entertainment-oriented. But, again, people can get a sense. Go out there and try it. Get a sense of what it's like to be the designer and get a sense for what some of the things in the evolution theory might be able to do or not do. And I think it's kind of fun that the debate's even going out to the entertainment level now.
Absolutely, Dennis. And I think that if you go and try the game Spore and you understand what it's like to be the designer, you're going to understand that many common Darwinist objections to ID are actually not very good objections. For example, Darwinists often say that similarity between different organisms implies common ancestry, and somehow that is supposed to refute intelligent design. Well, if you are a designer in Spore, you're going to find that you're reusing parts that other designers have used all the time. And so similarities clearly in the practice of the game Spore do not necessarily indicate common descent. They can also indicate common design. Another objection that I think that Spore sweeps away is the argument that poor design necessarily refutes design. You can go out there on YouTube and find all kinds of organisms that have been created using Spore, but they're pretty bad designs if you're looking for some kind of energetic efficiency, or if you're looking for organisms that are just, you know, designed to survive and reproduce. I think that Spore shows that if something is not energetically efficient, that doesn't refute design. So again, I think the more you play Spore, the more you're going to get a sense for what we see in the biological realm. It does not refute design in any way. As a matter of fact, maybe it supports design. So let's move on now to the final top resource of the year 2008, according to your top 10 resources.
Casey, that has to be the Expelled movie, and we covered it under our top 10 news stories because I think it was an important cultural event, but it's also on our top 10 resource list because you can now buy it in DVD, and people can watch it at home. You can purchase a license to show it to large groups. We did one here in Colorado Springs, had about 100 people show up, and then held a discussion afterwards, and people were just fascinated by this, had lots of questions after the movie. So I think for student groups or on the college campuses, church groups, great idea is to host a showing of the Expelled DVD movie and hold a discussion afterward. We also have some resources available on our website at arn.org. If you do a Google search on Expelled Super Bundle, we're offering this movie, DVD movie, along with Slaughter of the Dissidents book that we just talked about, and three ID documentaries. We're offering all five of those resources in one bundle for $50. Normally it'd be about $125 to buy all those resources. So this is number one on our list, and we put it in a super bundle because we can't think of a better tool, more relevant to our culture right now, to get people thinking about this whole issue of Darwin and design, and how free should we really be able to explore these ideas in our culture today and talk about them, and are there implications to this? I think that's another question that Expelled addresses in a great way as they look at some of Hitler's ideas and how those were linked to Darwin's ideas. And of course, Darwin wasn't the only idea that led to Hitler's nation, but it was certainly an important one. And I think the movie makes that point that ideas have consequences. And if we think we got here by random processes and don't have any purpose in life, we're going to live life one way. If we think that we were intelligently designed for a purpose, I think we live life a different way. And I think Expelled is a great movie that highlighted both of those.
Well, Dennis Wagner and Kevin Wirth, this is wonderful to know about, and it's really great that you guys are offering many of these resources at a discounted price on your website, arn.org. I want to encourage our listeners to go to arn.org, where you can see these top 10 resources at the website, arn.org/top10. That's spelled T-O-P-1-0. So thank you very much, Dennis and Kevin. This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.discoveryinstitute.org.